You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. This week I have another very special guest. You may know him as Harv and Health on Instagram. And today's special guest is Harvey Howarth. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be on.
Awesome. So we're going to cover a number of topics today. We're going to cover your diagnosis of colitis. We're going to go through what that was like with surgery. We're also going to cover a very special activity that you're doing at the moment, which is training for the Manchester Marathon. We'll cover that in a bit later on, and who you're doing that for and how that's going. But before we move on to that, we will dive straight into your diagnosis, if that's okay. And this was around sort of, well, the diagnosis was a bit later, but the first symptoms of colitis was around 2016, was that right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you the whole backstory to how I've come about to 2024 from 2016. I suppose it's worth prefacing it with what colitis is. So colitis is part of inflammatory bowel disease, and it's inflammation of the large intestine. So whenever you hear the word itis, think inflammation. Now, back in 2016, if we rewind back to that point, I was doing my GCSEs, you know, life was good. I had a great group of friends around me. I was doing all the sports I wanted to do. Couldn't complain, really. I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to go kayaking in the French Alps. So I applied straight away. Now, at this point, I had very little experience of kayaking at all, you know, whether that's in a pool or in a French ravine. With that said, I started training with a group of guys that also signed up, and all was going well. So we first started off in a pool, learning roles to make sure, you know, didn't just spend our whole time swimming in France. And after a few sessions, we ended up going out into the rivers to get some real life experience rather than just paddling about in a pool. So we're traveling about the north of England and finding the best kayaking spots to practice. And I look back on this part of the whole experience with quite a lot of fondness. Of how lucky I was to be able to do these things. I think I've maybe spoke too soon, to be honest, Tom. After one trip to a river in Bury, and if you're from the north of England, you may know that a river in Bury or around Bury would not be the most hygienic place to kayak. After that trip, I was very, very ill. And when I say ill, I mean violently sick, sort of ill. I was throwing up night and day, and almost lost a stony weight overnight. And, you know, they say hindsight's 20/20. And so being able to just look back on this, that's where I think this whole downward spiral into getting colitis started. So fast forward to a couple of years later. And, you know, throughout that time, throughout 2016, 2017, I was okay, but I'd still had some stomach issues. We then get to 2017, 2018, and I started seeing symptoms. So, you know, bleeding, I was rushing to the toilet a lot. As a naive teenager, I thought it was just bad eating. I thought I just had a really bad diet. And so I thought, this is fine, I'll just crack on with it, you know, eat better. But it didn't go away. And it got so bad, I was going to the toilet, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 times a day. It was immense, really, and I was drained from it. very tired, waking up every night, every half hour of the night, didn't really sleep. So then we get to July 2018, which is when I was diagnosed. And yeah, so that's where we get to my diagnosis.
Yeah, you said you were very sporty, or still am, or still are, sorry. What type of sports did you do sort of before before 2016?
So, I suppose I was really into athletics. So I did earlier on. I got to national level biathlons. I was also really into rugby until that got stopped by when I fractured my pelvis by running too quickly. So I didn't even, I didn't even get tackled or anything. I just ran too quick. So yeah, not too sure if that's a flex or not, but yeah. So athletics and rugby were the key ones. Swimming I was also into on the swimming team at school. So yeah, I was quite active. As soon as I started getting the symptoms, that quickly decreased, because it's so debilitating, you just can't do anything.
For sure, for sure. Just out of interest, what position did you play rugby wise?
I played outside centre.
All right, a
So
running position then.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not a not a
Stay
prop
staying out of
forward.
the rough forwards, yeah.
So you were a triathlete, national biathlon, played rugby, very, very active. So there was no inclination beforehand, no family history, nothing beforehand. Before the diagnosis or
There
before
was nothing.
2016.
No, it came completely out of the blue, and we've not experienced this before. And with an illness like IBD, colitis or Crohn's, it's not just you that it affects. You can see that it affects other people around you, just from the perspective that they care for you, and they're looking out for you. I'm quite a stoic, so I think I put up with more than perhaps I should have, and that's why I left it too late. But yeah, as I say, hindsight's 2020, and if I'd known sooner, then I would have gone sooner. But as a teenager, you just think anything other than going to the doctors, especially as a teenage boy.
Sometimes it's exactly it's the last place you want to think about going, I'll deal with it, I'll put up with this, I'll put up with that, and then suddenly you think, right, okay, I probably should do something about this.
Yeah.
And so you put up with it or put it off or whatever it might be for a couple of years, and then you got to sort of end of A levels around sort of 2018. Was it one particular thing that make you go, right, I've got to go to the doctors now, or was it just a constant, I just can't put up with this anymore?
To be honest, I think I've got my parents to thank for making me go to the doctors. Yeah, like I say, I thought it was about my diet. I didn't think anything else. I'd never heard of IBD when I did get diagnosed. So I did just thought it was down to what I ate. I really did lose a lot of weight, and it's only when I look back at pictures from around my time of diagnosis that I realized I was severely ill. I just couldn't see it at the time. I thought I was fighting fit, but really I was fighting for my life. So yeah, once I got that diagnosis, after increased blood loss, urgency, go to the toilet, weight loss, I saw my first consultant. We sat down, we talked about my symptoms. I explained that I was seeing blood in my bowel movements and I was experiencing urgency. And then he asked to examine me. Now, Tom, I've never been examined before by that point. I didn't really know what it meant. Turns out it's something I didn't want really, but anyway, it had to happen. And a quick tip is just relax for anyone who is going through this. Don't try and tense up when you have an examination. The feeling will be like you need to go to the toilet. You don't worry. So, I was only 17, 18 at the time. None of this was what I anticipated. But following that examination, I was booked in for a full colonoscopy for conclusive evidence.
So that was it was quite a quick diagnosis then, I take it,
Yeah,
from
well, I
that
mean, I
point.
th it would have been quicker if I'd gone to the doctors quicker, I suppose. And maybe it could have been a year earlier. But in terms of actually going to the doctors and then, seeing a consultant, I think I was quite lucky in that sense because I've heard horror stories of people having to wait months and months and months to see someone. But yeah, as once I'd seen the consultant first, it was a matter of weeks before I went in for the colonoscopy. And had confirmation that I had colitis.
That's pretty quick. That's pretty quick. So when you said you thought, right, it might just be my diet, it might just be, oh, I'm not eating so well, or this, that, the other, did you try any particular dietary changes before going to the doctor?
Before going to the doctor, at the time I think I'd well. Passed my driving test in 2017, so then I was driving to sixth form to school, and so it was very easy. And then to work as a lifeguard, it was very easy to pick up a Mackey's or a KFC. But outside of that, I don't think I ate badly. So I think I just put it down to something because how could it be anything else? Yeah, I mean, in terms of diets, it was more after the diagnosis where I was desperate to try anything that came into play, where I was trying things like, the carnivore diet. I was trying just juices. I was trying just fish, because I was desperate, Tom. I was really desperate to try and slow down the pace at which things were happening.
Was there any sort of logic behind that, or was it just, I'm going to try this, or was there an actual piece of research that you thought, oh, I've seen this, I'm going to try it?
After diagnosis, I really concentrated on understanding the illness, and I did a lot of research, as I say, into diets, and some people said it worked, but I think I was too far down the line if there was any chance of anything working in a way. I was looking at research papers, reading them all the time. It was like a second job. And I was reading it, yeah, and so reaching out to researchers in different countries, finding out about their research. So I was quite, I'll say, committed to try to find something that would work for me.
So you
Yeah,
went the whole nine yards then.
exactly. Yeah, a consultant described one of my main IBD doctors described the medication journey as a ladder. So, you're on one rung, and then if that doesn't work, you go to the next one. If that doesn't work, you go to the next one. And in total, I went up eight rungs before we decided nothing's working. You hold out hope with every medication, and you feel in the first few weeks that some are working. Some definitely don't, and one gave me a horrendous reaction. It was the first one that gave me a horrendous reaction. So yeah, you do hold out hope, and I think I pushed it, like you say, the whole nine yards to try and find something that would work.
So if we touch on medication, because there is a story that you have told about a particular medication. I don't know if you wanted to go through that now.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. And I suppose I'll start this off by saying I had a reaction to this medication. It doesn't mean someone else trying it will. I think it's a pretty tame
Sure.
medication because it's the first one that most people are put on. I think I was just unfortunate in this instance. The first medication I was put on was something called mesalamine or mesalazine, and it's part of a 5-ASA drug family. So it's generally the first point of call for IBD treatment due to it's orally administrated and it targets general inflammation in the gut. And its delivery method is quite clever, so it's delayed. And so it kind of opens up and works once it's in your large intestine. So I started on a lower dose of it, and it was, I think, 2.4 grams per day, which equated to 6 tablets. And after 8 weeks, that didn't work. So we doubled the dose. And, after starting mesalazine, I was also prescribed with steroids, so prednisolone, which was the most effective thing that worked for me, but with the ramifications of it and the things it can cause with your bones, I couldn't be on that for too long. So after 8 weeks, I increased the mesalazine intake, and over the course of the next 2 months, the medication just wasn't working. My symptoms remained the same, and I was really struggling. Adding on to this, as we spoke about before, I was quite fit before this. Now I was feeling really unfit. And when I say unfit, I mean, the stairs just felt like my worst enemy. I was struggling to get up a set of stairs without needing a rest at the top. Driving, not specifically driving, but getting into my car felt like a burden. I had a VW Polo at the time, and I'm 6'4". So, I had to bend down a bit, but come on, I shouldn't be out of breath just get into the car. Little did I know, I was suffering from an acute medical condition called pericarditis. And I thought, how on earth could I have thought I was just so unfit, and had been eating badly? It's almost comical to think back on that now. The turning point for me with these issues of feealing really unfit and tights around my chest was that one day I was walking back to my car after college. I got to my car and I struggled to lift my bag into the boot or trunk for any Americans that are listening. And then I set off home with my hand on my chest. Halfway home on the motorway, I called my dad because I was in so much pain. I said to him, "Dad, I'm going to go to the GP. My chest is really, really hurting, and I think I need to get it checked out." He said, "Okay, half, that's fine. Let us know if you need anything." 5 minutes later, I called him back. I said, "Dad, I'm going to the hospital. I love you." And I was in the worst pain. I felt it in my chest and down my left arm. I thought it was a heart attack. And I thought it was important to tell my dad I loved him because I really thought that was it. I thought I was going to die that day, on the motorway driving to a hospital, still probably half an hour to go. Now, obviously, I'm speaking here, so I'm still alive.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah, exactly. Not speaking from beyond the grave, you know.
Now that would be a podcast episode.
It would, yeah. But yeah, it was definitely the closest I felt to actually dying. So I got to the hospital after meeting my parents along the way to swap cars and pushed swiftly through to A&E. Had an ECG to do an echocardiogram of my heart, and the result was I had pericarditis. So what is pericarditis? It is where you have something called a pericardium around your heart, which is basically a sac around your heart that protects it. Mine had filled with fluid, and I had a lot of fluid. I think it was just shy of 2 liters, which means it was putting a lot of pressure on my heart as it was trying to beat. That's why I was feeling so much pain and pressure as I was lying on my side in bed, or lifting anything. And so I then had to have what they call a procedure. It's not an operation, it's a procedure where you go into an operating room, are stood up but still slightly on a decline, and then they take a big needle, a kind of comical size needle, from your sternum up into the pericardium and withdraw the liquid. That was quite an experience that I won't forget. And there were student doctors there while I was talking to them as this needle's going into me. Yeah, an experience I won't ever forget. After a few days in the hospital, yeah, I had over a liter of fluid, and the normal kind of range is about 50 mils in the pericardial sac. So yeah, as I say, extremely rare, But it was quite an experience, and then one I've got to live through. And I think, Tom, in your introductory podcast, you said that the things you've been through have made you stronger. And I can absolutely attest to that. I was already a stoic, but I think I can put up with quite a bit. And like you say, got a quite high pain threshold. And more than just pain, but kind of just day-to-day life stuff, I can put up with, I think.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sure. I just gonna pick up on two things that you said for that. One, thank you very much for saying trunk as well, because over 50% of people that listen to this podcast are either from Canada or America. So
Of
thank you for
course.
catering to them. Always like to please our worldwide audience.
Absolutely.
And secondly, you had student doctors there around you. I've obviously had that experience as well. With student doctors coming in for me and my appointments because of the rarity of the condition, and they want to study and sort of see a condition in its rarest form. Were they there because your pericarditis was so rare, or were they just there just because?
I think it was a bit of both.
Okay.
Even the doctor or consultant who did the procedure said it's incredibly rare, especially when it comes to the medication I've been taking. And so yeah, they definitely seemed intrigued. And I think it can feel a bit daunting having student doctors in there because they can seem young, right? But at the end of the day, the way I think of it is, firstly, it's a medical setting, and they're the next generation of doctors. So when I'm 60, or 50, 60, 40, 50, 60, they're going to be the doctors treating me. It's the same when you have to go for a colonoscopy. It can feel a bit embarrassing, but the fact is, these doctors and these medical professionals do this day in, day out. And so that's, they get it, and they see this all the time. So it's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, every doctor I've dealt with is just incredibly professional. They do it, as you said, they do it day in, day out. Yes, it might feel odd for us going through, various procedures, surgeries, whatever it might be. But no, they're very professional. They do this all the time, and do it incredibly well. So yeah, if anybody does have student doctors in, I mean, almost take it as a I took it as a source of pride, really, that I'm that rare that everyone has to come and see me. So it's yeah, I looked at it the other way rather than who are all these people and why are you all looking at me. Yeah, I just kind of said, well, yes, I'm very, very rare, and yeah, you've all come to see me.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Yeah, as I say, I was having a laugh and a joke with them before the needle took away every breath in me.
how was that then? So a giant needle, stick a cartoon size needle, shove it into your chest, and what, just draw the fluid, and that's it?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the room gets a bit darker. Not metaphorically, literally.
No.
And then yeah, they scan and check where the pericardium is, so they don't end up puncturing your heart, which thankfully didn't happen. Sorry, I feel like I'm scaring people here, but it's very rare.
Yes.
And yeah, so but it all went to plan. You're awake. It's not so much painful, but it's actually just more discomfort, really. Because obviously you get sedation, and it's over relatively quickly. I was awake the whole time. Yeah.
Perfect. So, were there any other surgeries that you've needed, or was that really the only procedure you've had?
Before, well, so that was before my stoma surgery. In that time, that's the only procedure I've had. So I've been quite fortunate in that sense. Yeah, as I say, I think I was putting off any kind of surgery for as long as possible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not necessarily something anybody wants. It's more necessity, I guess. I don't think there's anybody who really wants to go under the knife, but if you need to, you need to. It's life-saving in a lot of senses. But yeah, no, thank you very much for sharing that. So obviously you presumably set that medication to one side and said, yeah, I'm not using that again. So are you medication now? Are you medication free? Are you?
I am medication free now. So as I said, I tried eight different medications. The only one that did work, that's between, oral, taking medication orally, or going in for infusions. Nothing worked. The only thing that did work was steroids, but you can't be on them for a long time. And I had quite an immense moon face from it. I was looking back on photos recently, and yeah, couldn't quite believe how much of a round face I had. So it was comical. But yeah, no medication now. I once you've got colitis, I think you're always classed as always having it, unless you have a permanent stoma. In my case, I have technically. A temporary ileostomy, because I still have my rectal stump, which means that I could have everything reversed. I had to have a I had to go to endoscopy and the endoscopy suite just the other week, and I do still have active colitis in my rectum. I'm not holding out on any reversal anytime soon, but to be honest, I'm not too bothered. I've got the freedom back that I once had. Would I choose to go to the toilet 50 times a day or 3 to 4? Probably 3 to 4.
Yeah, makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Okay, fantastic. There's another part that I just wanted to touch on as well, about serotonin. I was listening again to another podcast that you've done a few years ago, and you talked about serotonin in the gut, and but 90% of serotonin is found in the gut, and serotonin is responsible for mood. Sort of cognitive activities, reward learning, and memory. And if you've had sort of any stomach procedure, that can really affect the levels of serotonin. And it's one thing that certainly I learned is how the stomach and brain are connected. What sort of been your experience with that sort of psychologically?
You're absolutely right. I think there is a lot of psychology with this, whether directly or indirectly. So the serotonin piece is what I found fascinating, and it explains so much about how, what we eat can affect our mood, and how illnesses within our stomachs and our whole digestive system can really affect how we feel. And if we feel happy, if you're feeling drained or you've got something that's going on in your system, then that's really going to affect how your body produces serotonin, and therefore kind of makes you feel. The brain gut axis and the brain gut connection, I think, is fascinating as well in terms of the psychology. I felt that I think for instance. There were times where I felt if I went into a colder environment, even if I was wrapped up warm, or if I went into a certain room, even, or if I went into my car, it felt like an immediate switch for, okay, you're going to go to the toilet now, Harvey. You have to go now. And I felt that was a psychological trigger, between my brain and my, my digestive system. So I think there's a lot there that needs to be explored. But that's not to say it would, treat the underlying condition. But I think it would help a lot in terms of helping people with managing their own condition as it is.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, I totally agree that there's an awful lot of psychology in any stomach condition, whether that be Crohn's, colitis, Hirschsprung's, whatever that might be. And yeah, definitely some research to be done. And there's definitely some little bits of research out there, but not a huge amount when it comes to serotonin. So switching gears, I'd like to talk about what you're currently doing. So you are, as I explained in the intro, you're currently practicing is not the right word, but currently looking to
Training
run
for,
the
yeah.
sorry
Training for a
training
marathon,
for, yeah, that was the word I was looking for. I should know this being in sport,
yeah.
but it's late at night. It's yes, training for the Manchester Marathon. First of all, and again, I've never run a marathon. But why did you pick a marathon to run?
I've never run a marathon either. So it's quite a terrifying thing to consider, even about 8 weeks out now, I think, roughly. Why did I pick a marathon? I think I like to push myself. The way it came about was a friend approached me and asked if I wanted to do it. I could have easily said no. But as I said, I do like to push myself. I'd done a 10K. It last year in July time, which I think was the Manchester Great Manchester 10K. So I suppose the next natural step would have been a half marathon. But I might as well have jumped. I just jumped to the marathon itself. And as part of training, I've had to do a half marathon in a way, so might as well take two off at once.
Sure. Yeah. No. I totally get that being a runner as well. But you said that you are looking to run for a charity, and naturally that charity being Crohn's and Colitis UK. What kind of correspondence have you had with them so far?
So I'd reached out to Crohn's and Colitis UK a while back before I'd actually signed up to the marathon, and the reason for that was because I'd originally, originally planned to do another event, but due to illness, I'd been able to unable to even start it. So this was before I'd even had my surgery, so I was quite unwell. So really, I don't know what I was thinking at the time. As I say, a bit of a stoic, maybe I didn't know how ill I was. So I'd reached out to them back then about doing some fundraising, and they've been fantastic in helping, giving me supplies, which I still have, in terms of Crohn's and Colitis UK balloons. They've given me a vest that I'll be wearing on the day, and so I've carried that through, and yeah, I'll be raising money for them. In terms of why them, we've been preempting a question here. As you'd expect, it's because because I've had colitis, and the reason I've got my back is because of colitis, and it affects it's a young person's illness. It affects a lot of young people, and if there's anything that can help advance, progress in the area of finding a cure for Crohn's and colitis, the better. Because it stops anyone even getting to the point where I've had to get to. And so whilst I'm glad to have my bag, would I prefer not to have it? Sure. But yeah, that's why I'm raising money for Crohn's and Colitis UK.
You play the card you dealt effectively, don't you?
Exactly, yes.
I mean, it's one of those things that believe looking at up-to-date research is about 0.4 of the population have Crohn's or colitis, one in 250 people, so less rare than my condition, but yeah. Definitely very, very important. I want to talk also about training plans, and about how has colitis affected training plans, or has it affected training plans?
So I suppose since having the surgery, it's been it's not been something I've had to consider at all in terms of my actual colitis. My having the surgery and having a stoma bag has eradicated all concern about having to rush to the toilet, with the exception of, you know, unexpected filling of the bag, right? I've not had to consider colitis specifically. In terms of having a stoma, I've made some considerations there. If ever I'm going out on a run, I'll put a fresh bag on to make sure the adhesive's as effective as possible and I don't have any leaks. I wear a support belt just to keep things in place. Otherwise it's been fine. I think I've been lucky. When it comes to doing the marathon on the day, I am admittedly a bit nervous about if I need to empty my bag at any point. 42 kilometres, 26 miles is a long way. And so if I'm running, I'm not looking for a 2-hour marathon time. I'm looking for sub 5 hours. That's still a long time to run and a long time to not empty your bag. And obviously there'll be facilities on the way, but there won't be what facilities that'll be maybe most accessible for people who need to empty a stoma bag. So usually in parts of my training, I've been keeping close to home, doing loops, as opposed to doing, an in and out straight line.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, yeah, for sure. So you talked about your colitis, about staying fairly close to home, just in case you do need to pop back for whatever reason. One thing that I've learned through doing research about stomach illnesses is that obviously core strength is going to be a bit trickier with those with stomach conditions, which makes total sense because the muscle's not quite there. And obviously core strength being a huge part of running, otherwise you end up, well, kind of like how I run, where I just end up stooped over and because I just haven't got the core strength there. Have you had to do more core strength work alongside your running, or have you been able to just do that via the running?
I think any core strength work I've done has been more passive in terms of, through other exercises. You're absolutely right. I think through being ill, losing so much weight, having surgery, I've lost a lot of core strength. After surgery, I've been very anxious, I think, actually, to do any direct abdominal workouts. Because I don't want to, get a hernia or something like that. That, it's not ideal, to put it lightly. So I do go to the gym and do, workouts, but I don't focus on my core at all, to be honest. However, having said that, I've got a PT to make sure I'm doing the right thing and not making a mistake in the way I approach my exercises. And so as part of that, it's about keeping your core tight. And so that's what I mean by saying it's not direct exercise to work out my core. It's more passive. So if I'm, working out my chest, I'm keeping my core tight and held in as I do a chest press or a bench press. So I think that's helped. And in terms of running, obviously, like you say, it's easy to just hunch over. So I have a kind of being active, making an active effort to keep upright or in the correct position That definitely plays a part in that. And it also goes to not just exercise, but sitting at home. I'm work from home, and so making sure you've got the right seat to support your back, and keeping your core kind of secure, so you're not hunched over.
Yeah, no, I do that also. You suddenly you're tapping away for 4 or 5 hours, whatever it might be. I obviously work from home as well, and you might start to have backache or things like that. And it's probably just because you've been hunched over, and so yeah. But that goes for everybody, whether you've got stomach illnesses or stomach conditions or whatever. It's making sure you're supported, and yeah, all the usual. The usual things. One thing question I did want to ask you is, obviously we talked about all the things you've been through from 2016 to now, sort of all the 8 year journey that you've been on. What is life like now?
Life is so much better, Tom. As I said, I didn't want the surgery. I was trying to hold it off for as long as possible. And so when we're going into sur but going into surgery, I was looking forward to it so much because I'd really lost hope at that point. And to kind of put that into perspective, I went in for surgery on the 27th of September, 2021, I think it was. And I woke up, hours later. I looked down from a hospital bed and saw this bag attached to me, and I just burst out into tears. And the tears weren't out of sadness for having the bag; it was because I was so relieved that the pain and all that suffering was over. I just couldn't stop crying. The nurse was there. Kind of a mix between crying and overjoyous laughter. So I'm much better now. And I think you always go into once you get colitis, you've got it in the back of your mind that surgery is a possibility. And so you try and hold it off. You don't want it, if you can avoid it. But what I'd say to anyone is, every cloud has a silver lining, and this definitely has the silver lining, which is freedom. So definitely glad to have it. And it's enabled me to do more now than when I had colitis, and I'm definitely glad for that.
Definitely. No, for sure. Thank you. That's no, that's really well summed up. And sorry, I keep saying final question and I keep having another question. Who has been your biggest support along the way, or biggest people who've supported you?
I suppose it comes down to a few people, right? I couldn't pin it down to one. Firstly, my family. They've always been concerned for me, even and then and, you know had my back and been to these appointments with me. So thanks, mum and dad. My girlfriend has always been there. When you've got colitis and you're having to go to the toilet all the time, that takes a lot of patience. And so that you're ready to go out, and suddenly you've got to dash to the toilet, and then you're waiting, and she was waiting for me, so I'm really grateful for her. And then it goes to medical professionals, either whether it's IBD nurses who give the guidance on the ground about what to expect, what's next, the consultants. And stoma nurses as well, who give you the guidance and support after surgery, as to if you're facing the issues. I think what goes wider afield, going further afield, sorry, in terms of who I'm thankful for after surgery, I think support groups are a massive part of helping you recover. For me, that came in the form of joining stoma support groups on Facebook. After you've had stoma surgery, you've got to be quite careful with what you eat because you don't want to get a blockage and end up back in hospital. So I joined these Facebook groups, predominantly not just to see other people's experiences, but to ask questions and to find out what kind of foods worked for them, so I could make a good judgment on the foods I could eat and the foods I couldn't eat. So it worked quite nicely. I just search up a food, and if people have had a negative response to it overall, then I'll think, okay, stay away from it. I should have done that before I ate popcorn, because that was the one thing that really did not work for me.
Popcorn, that's interesting. I'd out of all the foods, you could have said curry, you could have said spicy hot wings, you could have said, popcorn would have been the would have been, is it just as an aside, is it sweet or salty, or is it just literally the popcorn itself?
If you want a preference, it's sweet popcorn, but I think it was the popcorn itself. I think I knew I was taking a bit of a risk, but the day after I just felt like absolute hell on earth, but made it through without having to go to the hospital. So that was a lucky escape, I think.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Harvey, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. And very lastly, where can people find you?
So people can find me on Instagram at Harvin Health, and great to see if anyone has any questions. Happy to answer them. What I will finish with is, don't give up if you're going through the same kind of journey as me. All of what you go through in life does make you a stronger person, and whether you find a medication that puts you in remission, or you find yourself facing surgery like me, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and equip yourself with the knowledge going into anything, because knowledge really is power. And if you know what to expect, it makes things much more manageable.
I concur. Absolutely fantastic. Well said. Well, Harvey, best of luck with the marathon.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully talk to you again afterwards once you've completed the marathon. We'll see how it went. We'll do a part two and we'll see how we go. But thank you ever so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprung's_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.